Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
You are listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Shore. 72-hour non-stop protection, tested to the limits. Shore, it won't let you down.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the GAR, brought to you by Shore 72-hour protection. You'll be delighted to know that I've got Niall McIntyre with me, as always, but you'll be extra delighted to know that we've got a really special guest, one of the top footballers at the Intercounty game right now, Ryan O'Donoghue. Ryan, how's it going?
How's things, lads? Thanks for having me.
No, brilliant for you to come on. Now, obviously, you would rather have been playing last weekend. Maybe we weren't in the championship anymore, but were you still able to enjoy it? What was a great weekend of football?
Yeah, of course. I love watching any type of sport. Wimbledon was on as well. I had it on the phone. But yeah, look, two great games. I think for the majority of people thought that Dublin and Kerry were just going to walk it. But to be fair to Monaghan and Derry, there was times in the second half where they both could have pushed on, but in the end, Dublin and Kerry won, and we're in for a cracker Sunday week.
No, we are indeed. We will obviously get into the big games, but we're going to talk about you just for a little bit. You're still playing with the club, playing yesterday. How did it go?
Yeah, we beat Crossmolina in the league quarterfinal, so I went back playing straight away. I played against Bearshoe last weekend in the last group game, so it's nice to move on pretty quickly, not dwelling on the past, and it's nice to get back to the club, playing with my mates, playing with my brother, he's playing as well, so it's nice to get back to Belmullet, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And people might not know that GAA wasn't necessarily your first love in terms of sport. You were a good wee boxer when you were younger as well. I read somewhere that you were running the roads at 6 a.m. on the way to school. How did that all come about?
Yeah, so that was when I was 11, boy one. I was only 33 kilos, pretty small back then, still am pretty small, but a bit bigger now, but yeah, my dad, before primary school, both of us used to get up and he used to drive behind me in the Berlingo van, and I used to run a mile up and a mile back before school, and then get ready to school, go to school and run home again from school and then go to training. So our boxing taught me a lot of self-discipline, and I keep a lot of it with me in my own training nowadays. But yeah, boxed for 3 years, won an Irish title in my boy 1 year. Lost the All-Ireland final then 2 years in a row, by two and by three, it's actually the same fella. But yeah, I look back on it in fond memories. The making the weight, though, was absolutely killer. Like, being 33 kilos, I wasn't that much, I didn't have much on me at that stage, and I was probably natural weight 34. And like, just making the weight was an absolute killer, and I suppose that's really what turned me off it in the end. 3 years of that was really tough, especially only a small kid. But I really enjoyed it. My dad was my coach as well, so I look back at it with fond memories.
Oh yeah, I think people don't maybe understand how hard it is with the weight loss, because obviously you're playing football at the minute. You probably like carb load the day before matches, eat loads of things. But with boxing, you're in like a negative energy balance because you're starving yourself and training like relentlessly. Now the training's quite addictive and it's really fun, but when you're starving, it is quite miserable.
Yeah, especially when you're only a kid. And the All-Ireland final weeks, if any boxers listen to it, they know it's the week after Easter Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I used to never be able to eat Easter eggs, like, and everyone around, all the cousins. That was one thing when I finished, I stuffed my face the following year because I knew I'd never be able to do it. But yeah, like, all my teammates know my diet when I came in was literally, when I was minor in 2016, Julo our caterer used to just literally make me plain pasta and plain chicken, because when I was 11, 12, 13, 14, like, that's all I ate. I just didn't like any sauces, and then the calories and that was just the easiest way, and I kind of got into an old routine of that. And eventually, through nutritionist Evan Regan, our nutritionist now, over the last couple of years, I've diversed, and because I had to be able to put on size and stuff like that to be able to compete at the intercounty level. But yeah, as a kid trying to make the weight, it's, you see all the UFC guys and YouTube and McGregor and all these guys making the weight. It's the hardest part of combat sport is making the weight, but there is an adrenaline rush of boxing in the ring and sparring against your mate in the club, and then obviously getting to fight at the weekend is the highlight of it all. It's a bit like football, but it's you and yourself in there. And yeah, the weight was tough, but it's pretty exciting.
And I know you didn't box at senior level, but if you don't mind me asking weight wise, but what would you have had to fight at now if you were to go back into the ring, like if you had to get down to the weight?
Well, there was a period Evan had me putting on 4 and 5 kilos, and I was eating nearly 4,000 calories a day compared to what it was back then, but probably around the low 70s probably. But now I'm in and around 79-80 kilos. But as all boxers know, you're trying to go the weight below your natural weight, because mm-hmm. Just to be that bit stronger. But yeah, probably the low 70s. But you look at from McConnell, I think is only 59 kilos, yeah. And like, look at the shape that fella's in. Yeah. So actually, the fella I beat in the Boy One final, James McGivern, mm-hmm. He's a pro boxer now. I think he actually
from
has
Belfast?
A job. Yeah. I beat him in the All Ireland final that day, and he's gone on to be a pro boxer. So
you're calling him out?
Yeah, no
rematch.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Them days are long gone.
When it's 4,000 calories a day, just one thing, because I know I've been trying, sometimes I'd be trying to, you know, put on a bit of condition and you're force feeding and you're going up from a small amount when you're younger. Like, what are you eating and how are you even getting that in?
Yeah, so the Optimum Nutrition Oat Gainers. So like, it was literally 3 scoops of them 3 times a day, and they were 1,100 calories each. And then you're trying to get your breakfast, lunch, and dinner on top of that. And then you're like trying to have rice cakes with peanut butter and all the good things that have loads of calories that are good. You're not going to the takeaway or the Supermax and getting a pizza or something like that. But Evan Regan is brilliant, and he literally has everything out on a plate for us to follow. And now it was tough, and you had to gym on top of that. And I was in playing with UL at the time, and it was hard to balance all that. But it's like the apprenticeship you nearly have to go through to reach the demands of intercounty football these days. And yeah, it was tough, but I tell you, it's a lot easier to do that than try and lose 5 kilos.
Yeah. Isn't it mad that at 12, 11 that you'd be thinking about your weight at boxing? Like, that's just alien to me. Like,
no, it is, yeah. And like, I still coach at a boxing club, and getting the kids, right, you really got to talk to them, you know, because you don't want to give them issues that they're going to have later on in life, but at the same time you don't want them going up against someone that's twice their size and they get hurt or they get, you know, put off the sport.
That was basically the main reason I lost weight. Like, I was not big at all, and like, there's stories, we in the Broadhaven Bay Hotel at home, we've a sauna, and like, I'd go to training and you'd be wearing the plastic bin bags on each leg, plastic bag up here, cotton t-shirts, everything. And then there was a Flannery lady working in the Broadhaven Bay, and it would close at 9 o'clock, and I'd finish training 10 minutes earlier, go out to the hotel and sleep in the sauna for a 20 minute nap while she was cleaning the dressing rooms, and Dad was setting an alarm, and I'd go in there and trying to sweat. This is now not every week, this is the week of making the weight, and try to sweat every last bit out of me. Like, this is only 11, 12 years of age. But it wasn't torture now. It wasn't child torture or anything, but it was all relative. But went to big depths to try and make the weight. But it's standing to me now. I think I learned a lot from that.
Is that the thing then, when you do make the weight, that is it like a day before the fight you're weighed and then you can kind of fill up? Or would you eat a good bit then, or what way would you do it?
So there was a Mayo's, the Connacht's, and then the All-Ireland. So it was usually end of February, end of March, and then the week after Easter, usually April time. And I wasn't, no, not really. You wouldn't be able to bulk up, because you'd weigh in maybe on the Monday, mm-hmm. and then you might box my box Monday. This is the All-Ireland final week, but you always had to weigh the morning of the final for the All-Ireland.
Right.
So, but then for the Mayos, you might weigh on the Saturday, and you might box on the Saturday and the Sunday, and then you might not box to the final for the following week, but you'd be fine. But you'd have to get it down again for the Connacht Championships in 2 weeks, so it wasn't worth. The only person that was suffering if I bulked up was me. I'd have to lose it all again. So
yeah,
it was just about keeping it a level as much.
It's almost depressing. Like I last competed, it was 2019 in the Ulsters, and it you weighed in on the Sunday, and then depending on the draw, you'd be in the quarterfinal on the Monday. And if you win that, you're fighting again on Wednesday, so you have to make weight again the morning after your fight. And you know, and after your fight, you're obviously starving and whatever. So, yeah, it puts you off it very quick. I won't be rushing back anytime soon. But
you just got to respect like the effort. And I know there's a lot of rewards for it in that. But like for me, I think the toughest sport in the world is boxing, number one, and UFC and them type of sports, because you're by yourself. Obviously, the highs are high, but the lows are pretty low. I remember losing that All-Ireland final in boy two and boy three, like, and it was great in boy one, and everyone celebrating around you. I was on 11 or 12, like mum and dad having a few beers and the coaches and that, and then boy two, boy three, you're just coming down that road back to Balmullet 4 hours, and it's just you in the back of the car by yourself, like, so it's, you got to respect all them boxers and that making them weight and everything. It's a tough sport.
Yeah,
when you are used to training like that from a young age, like football training must be like whatever you're asked to do, it must come a lot easier to you.
Yeah, definitely. As in, there's boys around you suffering too. There was times where I was suffering by myself, and it's, you look around and dad is the only one standing there, and he was drinking a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, like, and you're suffering, sweating buckets. But I've definitely taken stuff from that I'll carry with me for the rest of my career. The self discipline and just doing things when no one's watching you, like gym work. When no one, I'm by myself, back down in the Balmullet gym or in Galway or wherever I'm doing the gym work. There's no point pretending you're doing stuff, because the only person you're hindering is yourself. So that's definitely I've taken from the boxing.
And then you went from boxing and you played soccer at a pretty decent level. You played for Sligo Rovers. At what point did the crossroads come and you had to pick Gaelic football, and how did it come about?
Yeah, so I was 17 when I got the call up to the Sligo Rovers under 19 squad, and played with them for 2 seasons. And this was 2015. And then out of that, I actually got 3 caps for the Irish schoolboys, which I'm very proud of. I have the caps in at home in the mantelpiece, and played for them for a season and a half. And then in 2016, obviously, I was minor. And that crossroads kind of came when I realised I wasn't good enough to go across the pond and over to England and make it. That realisation hit pretty quick when you're coming up against teams, Shamrock Rovers and Bowes, and they were top quality. And do you know, as a kid, I suppose I had 2 dreams. The first dream was to play for Liverpool, and then the second dream is still well and truly alive, to win All-Ireland with Mayo. But the first dream shattered pretty quickly when I realised I wasn't good enough, and I always wanted to go to college and get an education. And at times, if you put all your eggs into soccer, you're not quite able to do that. So after talking with a lot of people around me, my mum and dad, I made the decision in 2016 to go back and play minor for Mayo. And I suppose I've never really looked back since.
No, not at all. And I suppose 2021 really was your big breakout year. You got the sort of starting position under James Horn. Killian O'Connor suffered a really bad injury that year, and he'd been taking the freeze for like the whole decade before, and now suddenly almost overnight you're the star corner forward for Mayo and you're taking the freeze. How did that even come about? Did you stick your hand up and say I'll take the freeze? Did James Horn know that you were a free taker?
Well, actually I took the freeze for the minors in 16, but in the under 20s run that we went on to get to the final, I wasn't the free taker, but I had been practicing. I was taking them from Balmullet. To be honest with you, after that game down in Clare where Killian done his Achilles, I went up to James and I said, look, I'm putting myself forward. I want to take the freeze. If it was obviously his decision. And to be fair, Killian helped me big time. Like, there was voice notes back and over, done a few kicking sessions with him just in terms of how to deal with a miss, how to deal with the crowd and all that. And I wouldn't be the free taker I am today if it wasn't for Killian. Like, and he's been pretty unlucky with the injuries the past couple of years, but James had faith in me, and thankfully they went pretty well in 21 and gone pretty well so far. But yeah, Killian was definitely a big help. He passed on his knowledge straight down to me because that's just the type of teammate and type of person he is.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people who would be listening to this would be maybe free takers themselves at their club, county, whatever, underage. What advice would you give them, or is there anything that Killian told you, like, they just always stayed with you in terms of practicing your frees?
Yeah, well, what I learned from a young age from Michael Fitzmaurice, he was their academy coach in Mayo, and it's a bit like golf. Everything is about routine as a free taker, because you can be taking it in your back garden, kicking over the plastic holes, or you can be taking a free in All-Ireland final against Tyrone or Dublin or whatever. And if your routine is the same, it doesn't matter the external noise or the conditions or the period in the game. So the number one thing I would say is having a routine and sticking to that routine, whether it's kicking a ball out in the back of the pitch in your home club or in Croke Park, it still should be the same. And then it's just all about whatever works for you. Ball placement, like you see the way Clifford kicks the ball, he kicks the ball hand out here, then there's other players who kick it in, kicking from here. I find having the ball out and kicking the middle of the ball, you're able to get more trajectory. I struggled when I was younger kicking the ball from here, and it was less consistent. So back to your point, the two main things I would say, number one is routine, because just that should never change. And then ball placement, when you're releasing the ball from your hand to your foot, is what I found was a big stepping stone for me, because obviously in open play you can't dictate that because the pace you're running at when you're getting tackled by some of the best defenders in the game, that's not an option you have. But from a free taking point of view, you can control that, and yeah, that really helped me.
Well, that year was a huge success in the terms that, like, you sort of were thrust into this position of being the main man up front. You were the top scorer for Mayo that year. You got an All-Star that year, reached the All-Ireland final. And you haven't really looked back since, but we need to talk about this season. It started off brilliantly under Kevin McStay, league champions. Got big championship wins against the likes of Kerry, Galway, huge. But then against Dublin at halftime, even though Dublin were winning, I think all the pundits on the Sunday game, me watching it, sort of, it still feels like it's Mayo of the upper hand in this game. What happened from your perspective?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think myself, I was pretty happy going into halftime. I thought, although we'd conceded the goal, and I think we reacted very well from the goal, I thought we were the better team going into halftime, even though we were a point down. Kevin had always said before the game that, look, it's going to be a point up or point down at halftime, so we knew that. And then, yeah, look, I think we thought that we were going to do to Dublin what we'd done to Galway the week before, scoring 1-5 without reply. And unfortunately, that just didn't happen. And the most disappointing thing out of that whole defeat is that we didn't give a true reflection of ourselves on the day. Look, we had a great year. Kevin, Rachi, Donny, Lehman, Damien coming in was great. New slate, we bled new blood. Sam Callanan, a great year. Bob Toohey got minutes. Dave McBrien, his first proper season. Like, we had a really, really good year and got a lot of positives out of it, but just to end like that was a bit disappointing, that we didn't really give a true reflection of ourselves in that second half.
Of course, and then I suppose no manager and no team really knew for sure how to deal with the new format, because no one's ever done it before. Do you think in the end, not topping the group and having to play the three games in a row was a consequence? Because we look at Mayo, we look at Galway, we look at Tyrone, all had to do them extra games, 3 weeks on the bounce. Galway didn't even make it to the third week. And just tired, did you feel the impacts of the previous game?
I wouldn't say I felt the impacts, but I do think the 3 weeks in a row was definitely going to be a tough ask for anyone. Damien Comer even said it yesterday on the Sunday game. Mm-hmm. Like, Kevin had always alluded to the 2 week break, keeping everything, and then obviously not beating Cork was a killer. We just didn't execute our plan in the second half. But yeah, the 3 weeks in a row really is tough, especially after tough group games as well in a short period of time. But look, that was the reward. We knew that going into the group stage, that was the way it was, and we had it in our own hands against Cork. But as I said, we just didn't execute what we wanted to do in that second half against Cork when we were in such a good position. But yeah, the 3 weeks in a row were tough, but look, we knew that going in, so it was our own fault. And whatever it is next year, we'll just have to go with it. But 3 weeks in a row was definitely tough, but it was our own fault anyway.
Last question on this season. What would be the main differences you noticed in Kevin McStay coming in compared to maybe James Horan? It's not even what's better or worse, just what's different.
I wouldn't say there's that much difference. Maybe Kevin has four underneath him in terms of Rachi, Donny, Liam and Damien, and Liam McHale has a great background in basketball, bringing a lot of different stuff like backdoor cuts and different analogies through basketball, which is pretty interesting. And then James like had one of the best forwards to ever play the game, Kieran McDonald, under him, which was great insight for me, and I learned a lot off him. So I think they were pretty similar, both Mayo men, both really proud Mayo men. And James obviously gave me my debut and played 2021 was probably my most enjoyable year, both club and county, and James was a part of that. So really enjoyed playing with James. And then Kevin has a 4-year tenure now, and we have a really good bunch of players there, and bled a lot of new blood this year. So really looking forward to getting going again next year.
No, absolutely. But we haven't finished this season just yet. Yesterday was a massive game, Kerry v Derry. Niall, you were at this match. It was enthralling to watch on the TV. What was it like being there in Croke Park?
Yeah, it was unbelievable, Lee. Like the first half, you might have been expecting maybe, you know, Derry might be a bit tentative. They might sit back a small bit and mightn't be bombing forward like they did. But there was no, I suppose Kerry contributed to it as well, that they pushed up on Derry, put them under pressure, and Derry responded and had won 11 kick to half time. And you know, they were on fire. Kerry were hanging in there through some moments of genius. I was watching David Clifford and Chrissy McCaig. I was watching their battle all day, and it was Clifford that probably was keeping Kerry in the game with just some unbelievable scores, really, while McCaig was putting them under pressure. Just a brilliant, brilliant occasion and a hugely entertaining game, I suppose. And that was the best thing about it. I know there was 43,000, which was a bad crowd to be there. Mm-hmm. But it sounded like, and when the game was getting exciting, it sounded like the place was full. It was very exciting.
Yeah, the Chris McCaig v David Clifford battle was something that was talked a lot about, you know, in the lead up to it, when everyone knew that was going to be the matchup. How do you stop Clifford? You don't really. You just try to slow him down, I suppose. I thought Chris McGig was interesting. He didn't seem to commit till blocks, I suppose, because he's so afraid, as any defender would be, of the sort of Clifford bounce. So you're nearly better letting him get the shot away, but getting as close to him as possible, rather than him selling you. I mean, he's got all the space in the world to get a shot. Like, I know you're not a defender, but I mean, what? How do you even prepare for a David Clifford?
Yeah, look, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? But, like, at times, Clifford McCaig was literally right on top of him, and he had his hand in his chest at one stage, and he still got the score away. I remember just in that game down in Killarney against him, Dave McBrien was literally right up on top of him, and Davey is a big man as well, but he's still up in the air. I think it's his reach and his arm span and the way he's able to get the ball to the foot so quick and the power in that leg. But yeah, look, that's the million-dollar question. Look, you just got to contain him. I think you're nearly writing off 8 points nearly straight away between frees and scores. I mean, what did he get yesterday? 9, I think.
9, yeah.
So, like, I think he got 8 against us as well, and he's probably getting that on average every game now. So it's just about containing him rather than stopping him and trying to stop the ball into him, because him and Paddy, once they click, they're very hard stopped.
Mm-hmm. You'd be used to that, Ryan, I suppose, having a lad man marking you. And just watching David yesterday, at times he can kind of, if the ball isn't coming, or if, you know, if there's a bit of a, if it's all slow out in the middle of the field, he'll go walking out the field and he'll act as if he's not too interested. And then he just comes alive when someone, if there's a small break. And all the while, one of the main things I noticed was that he was like the orchestrator. He was directing every carry attack, like pointing, you pass the ball here, or like telling the lad if he's running with the ball, like keep coming. And McCaig, like, it's so tough, the job he had. At times when the ball was outside, McCaig had his back turned to the play and was just looking at Clifford where he's going to go. He obviously got caught off the ball. Like, and his, like, McCaig was not dirty on him by any means. Mm-hmm. Like, he was fair, and even at the handshake at the very start, he doesn't go in and jostle him straight away. He just shakes hand, stands in. But is that it, Ryan, that in an instant you're maybe feigning a bit of disinterest, and then you just, like, go a little dummy and he's gone, and then he has the ball.
Yeah, that was the free in the first half. He looked disinterested, was going away, backdoor cut then, and McCaig pulls his jersey and get the free in. But yeah, look, you're trying to remember Andy Morne used to say, like, you're waiting until the defender takes his eye off you to look where the ball is, and then that's when you make your move. But yeah, McCaig's probably up there, probably the best one-on-one defender at the moment in the country, and I think he's done the best job on Clifford all year, and he still kicks 9 points. Like, but yeah, Clifford's off the ball movement, as is like Conor Callan is pretty much similar. His off the ball movement is crazy, and McGuigan yesterday as well. He got a bit of a battering. I'm not sure that was a free though, and a yellow card on David Clifford. I think that was a fair enough shoulder, but maybe in real time, look, it was hard to call. But yeah, some of the one-on-one battles yesterday, and definitely the day before with McManus having a world-class performance and rolling back the years on Saturday as well was good to see.
No, it was. And listen, I mean, we talk about matchups, and we were talking a lot about in the lead-up to it was like, how will Derry deal with Kerry? And you can't escape the fact you have to deal with David Clifford. But other than that, they were on the front foot. They really went for Kerry, you know. Like, and I didn't feel like Tyrone did that. You know, I thought they were too overly concerned and sort of cautious nearly. But Derry were so brave. They were so frantic, so intense. It was really enjoyable to watch, you know, even from the throw-in. It was just helter-skelter. They got a goal early. They were maybe... That's when you expected them to settle. Then they conceded a goal down at the other end. End-to-end stuff. My favourite point, though, out of all of it, was Conor Doherty's. Derry kept the ball for ages while all of the Kerry men were behind the ball. They were really patient. Kerry were drifting side to side, doing the whole zonal staying back thing. And Conor still managed to work just an inch of space and getting it over. But I just find it interesting because commentators, when Kerry do it, it's a set defence. It's not a blanket defence. It's only Derry and Ulster teams do blanket defences. But I'm telling you now, the Kingdom, Kerry, it was a blanket defence when they were doing that. But that was just how brilliant Derry were. They had Kerry properly pressed back and concerned about them. And the game was in their grasp. What happened?
I think, again, just like in the Dublin game, the strength of the bench, I think, in that final quarter really made a difference. Stephen O'Brien coming on at halftime definitely made a big difference. Obviously, he got that questionable free. You'd love to get it as a forward, but as a defender, you're saying that's not a foul. But look, the referee made it in real time. And then I think the score of the game for me was the score he got off the left. I think Kerry had missed two in a row. I think Graham O'Sullivan had missed one on the right, and Tom O'Sullivan, even though he'd been scoring them all year, missed one outside the left underneath the Cusick. And then for Stephen O'Brien to kick that one off the left with three Derry boys around him, I don't think after that then Kerry looked back. They really pushed on, and Tony Brosnan coming on got a few balls, and they in that final quarter they just had the edge, and Derry, I think, panicked a small bit, took a few pot shots and got turned over a few times. But Shane Ryan's save in the second half as well was a massive save. He had a masterclass down at us when we played them in Clarny as well. He's a great keeper, but Kerry really showed their quality in the last quarter.
It was kind of panic stations at that stage when O'Brien got that score, and it was so crucial because, as Ryan said, Graham O'Sullivan missed and Tom O'Sullivan missed, and inside Clifford was getting ticked. Like, he was like, come on lads, we need to lift it here. Dermot O'Connor kicked the ball out over his head and he didn't even turn to look and see where it went. He was just straight out like, lads, this game is getting away from us. One of the things that stood out for me about Clifford too was that, like, McCaig, as a lot of defenders do, Ryan, and you'd be used to it, he went up the field at different stages trying to get Clifford to come. And Clifford did go with him now maybe every second time. There was other stages he'd give Adrian Spillane a point, and I noticed that in the first half, Adrian Spillane hopped straight to it. Like, it's obviously a tactic cornerbacks use to try and get you out of the danger zone. Like, what is your... Do you follow him? Do you sometimes... I know you probably didn't have to do it against Dublin. I don't think I have to follow too many lads back, but maybe you did.
Not as much, but it's really a game of cat and mouse, really. I think Are we going to call it a blanket defence or a set defence? But when the other team is in a set defence, I'm not sure you have to follow all the time, because there's going to be... Bar Clifford, there was 14... numbers plus their 14 nearly at one stage. The keeper wasn't even in when David was left by himself. But in open play, I think in a turnover you have to go with the defender, because it's open. He could go right through the middle. But I think waiting back when there's a set defence, you're nearly saying, right, leave me here. If we turn it over, it's a goal here. Who was it last year? Was it Comer against Derry? It's a game of cat and mouse. You have to time it well. But if you don't follow him and then your man goes up and scores a point or a goal, you're getting an old...
It's a gamble.
Yeah, you're getting words from the sideline. But yeah, it's a game of cat and mouse. I think in the set defence, though, you can nearly say, go on off with you.
Yeah.
And then if we get a turnover, it's a goal. And I think that's sometimes a risk worth taking.
Some cornerbacks are just devils for it.
Even Garth McGillness, I know centre halfback, but I mean, he goes for it every single time. He must be the fittest man I've ever, like, it was insane. Right. He was just sprinting from box to box,
and he is so on the ball. He's so fast, and yeah, he's like, he's selling dummies, and he's going back the other way straight away.
Yeah,
he's so good and so quick on the ball. And every time he got the ball, like, Kerry were panicking because McInnes was coming through at such pace. He got the first goal. He set up the one for Toner. Ryan saved the other one for him. Like, what a player! And to see him stretchered off, and yeah, he was blowing into the, what do you call it, when you're
the whistle
yeah, when you're in, like, and that shows how bad it was. He was after kicking the ball and kind of kicked O'Shea, got it away, and he kicked him and could have done, like, serious damage to his knee. But lads, it was unbelievable display, Garrett McInnes. And if David Clifford wasn't man of the match, it was 100% Garrett McInnes.
BBC gave him man of the match.
Really?
Philip McMahon, yeah, he gave Garth McInnes it. Yeah.
Brendan Rodgers was brilliant as
well. He was,
Again, he's been brilliant all year for Derry. What did he kick yesterday?
Two, I'd say. Yeah. He hit the post as well. Was so unlucky there. A crucial time.
He was very good.
No, that's it. But just on McInnes and being so fast and fit and direct. And he's a bit demented even. Like, I mean, I think he pushes himself past even his own capabilities. Who's like that in the Mayo team? Like, who's winning all the sprints and just demonic when it comes? You can say yourself, by the way.
No, it's definitely not me. But Oisín, first person, Oisín Mullen, used to come, obviously he's in Australia now, but when he used to play six and I was at 11, he was just gone. Obviously, because you have a line behind you.
Mm-hmm.
It's different maybe when you're in the full back line. But obviously, we've seen Dave McBrien run up the pitch and score the goal against Galway. But look, Dave McBrien has had a really good year. He's just straight line from penalty spot to penalty spot and worked out from in the Galway game. But Paddy Durkin wins the majority, and Tommy wins the majority of the sprints in our setup. But yeah, Paddy probably is most like Garrett McInnes in terms of just the power and pace. Do you see that run when he ran after Matthew Tierney that time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's anyone else, definitely not on our team, that's making that run back. So definitely Paddy's pretty powerful.
I'd say David O'Connor wins the long distance.
Oh, he does, yeah. Yeah, he's some workhorse, some animal.
Like a fucking racehorse.
No, he is. He's like a stallion of a man. He's more like Brendan Rodgers. Like, I'd say he wins the long distance.
Will not stop.
Yeah, they cover so much distance. It's incredible. There's no point in denying the fact that some referee indecisions played a big, big part in this match. It's so funny. I was just tweeting sort of throughout the game, and I was getting tweets. I got one that was like, this referee is a disgrace, so biased towards Derry. How did David Clifford get a yellow card? And then not 2 seconds later, Joe McQuillan is just the most biased Kerry man I've ever seen. And I was like, well, the truth's probably somewhere in the middle lane. But there were some controversial calls. There's no way of denying it. You already touched on one there at the end, the foul on Stephen O'Brien. I didn't think that was a foul. To me, that was the biggest one. Derry, like, Kieran McFaul was in the middle of celebrating that turnover till the crowd. He literally turned face and lifting his arms, getting them roaring, because it was like that Tyrone 2003 thing against Kerry, you know, the swarm. And it really felt like a big moment. And it just got punctured by the whistle to say, actually, free in, Kerry take the lead, Stephen O'Brien. And that was a massive, massive decision. Do you guys think it was a foul or what?
Look, it's tough in real time to call it a referee night. It's probably the toughest gig in sport, being a referee of any live sport. Like, probably a bit harsh, but from the referee's angle, you can see he gets his hand in front and could have predicted that he pulled him down a small bit. But look, as a forward, you're delighted to get in. As you said, the Derry boys were celebrating the turnover. Yeah. But look, you just have to respect the decision. And Derry, I don't think that was the win and losing of the game.
No, definitely
I think I've seen Derry at a 52% conversion rate, and that's not going to get it done in All-Ireland semi-final day. So
no.
I think there was definitely a lot more than refereeing decisions that Derry can look back on and can definitely improve on.
No, absolutely, because I think Derry only kicked 4 points in the second half, and one of them was Shane McQuiggan's accidental point. So really, you know, they got 3 when it mattered most, like, and that's never ever going to be enough. And I don't think any of the Derry players will say that it's because of a referee decision. But another one, Niall, was Dermot O'Connor's black card. Now on the BBC, Oisín McConville was adamant that it wasn't a black card. He says because he didn't yeah, he pulled his leg, but he didn't pull him down. Mm. But they had Maurice Deegan, like, as part of the punditry team, the former referee, and he says, no, it is a black card. And Mickey Hart said it was a black card as well, and they had a bit of back and forth about that. It was good to watch, actually. Do you have any thoughts yourself? Was it?
I would say it was black card. I'm going to agree with Maurice Deegan. If he's able to analyse that in the referee's room as he was, and he says it's a black card, I'm going to go with him. But I suppose another a little bit of a harsh one too on Derry was when, remember, Brendan Rodgers was coming out with the ball and Sean O'Shea kind of gets him a little dig in the ribs.
And it spills to Clifford.
And Clifford was after giving that ball away himself as well. And that was a killer because Kerry had just, they'd taken over at this stage and they were all over Derry. And I suppose the what changed was that they really pressed up on the kick out and Derry had to go long. And Orrin Lynch went long three times in a row and Jack Barry got a fist to one. I think Dermot O'Connor won another. And, you know, this was right after, as you said, Ryan, the Stephen O'Brien point. And Kerry are just taking over the game. Jack O'Connor was given out after that. It was hard with the noise. That it was hard to get a message in and he was kind of calling for the Moira Fearna back. But he obviously got the message in to press up. And the Kerry forwards were just, there was no, like, Orrin Lynch was, he was kind of half looking to see if he could get an option for the short kick out, but nobody, nobody got free. And I suppose I want to ask you, like, when you are pressing, like, it's easy to say we'll press as a forward line. I'd say it's a tough enough thing to do to, like, press so hard that there's nobody free.
Yeah, like, I think we struggled big time in the first half of the Dublin game to get, I think Brian Howard got three or four in the pocket on to Cluxton's right that day. But yeah, it's all about just being together and cohesive and everyone knowing their job. And that's other than the Stephen O'Brien point, that's what changed. I think even the Derry manager said in his interview afterwards that the kickouts in the final quarter is kind of what, they didn't win any of their own primary possession and then Kerry got scores off that. But yeah, look, the press in Gaelic football now has gone to really important. And if you can retain your own possession from a kickout, you're if you can get above 85-90%, you're a long way there in terms of then if it goes long and you lose 50% of them, you're given more opportunities for the other team to score. So yeah, Kerry, whatever way Jack O'Connor got that message on, it definitely made an impact.
Like, would you just, you'd get that call from the sideline, like, we're all up now, and you just know what to do?
Yeah, well, you'd have that previously practice and training, or it might even come from a midfielder behind, or maybe the keeper might, some, there's a lot of smart lads, I'd say, there's a lot of smart lads on our team and definitely on that Kerry team as well, where they might have just said, look, Jeremy O'Connor might have said, look, lads, we need to press here. If we get a hold of this primary possession around the middle, we're going to, because when Derry were getting primary possession off their own kick out in the first half, they were, did they only have one or maybe two wides in the first half from one 11? And then when Kerry cut that out, then definitely made a big difference.
No, it definitely did. The last sort of big talking point in terms of like refereeing decisions, Shane Ryan, he came bulldozing out for a ball. He jumps midair, he wins the ball on the bounce, to be fair, and his both feet are in the air and he turns when he's midair and he sort of takes Shane McGuigan out of it full frontal, runs on himself and kicks it over the bar. The referee doesn't give it as a free. Again, just watching it on the BBC, Osh McConville, Michael Murphy didn't think it was a free, but again, Deegan and Mickey Hart did think that it was, and it's causing a bit of a rupture on Twitter. Where are your thoughts lie with that one?
No, I think the referee made the correct decision there. The man in the air going to get the ball has to protect himself. It's nearly the duty, the care of the tackler to figure out what he wants to do when the man lands, in my opinion. But yeah, it was a great score and it was a massive score for Kerry at the time. I think Shane Ryan plays outfield for his club at home, so it was a real forward score. And after Orrin Lynch scoring in the first half, Shane Ryan might have wanted to get one back of his own. But not for me. I think the referee made the correct decision there.
It's definitely the modern game, both goalkeepers scored.
Yeah,
100%. No, look, just it was brilliant, in fairness, by Kerry that, and it was, Clifford was the man of the match, and deservedly so, because he was the man that he kind, as Jack O'Connor said in that interview after the game, he was willing them on, and he was like, he the look of a man that just wasn't going to lose this game. Mm-hmm. And even, remember we were talking about Sean O'Shea when he intercepted Brendan Rodgers and it comes to Clifford, and he's running through and Tony Brosnan's over the top. Micheál Burns is on the right, and Micheál Burns is in acres, like, yeah. I mean, acres space. And like, I'd say nearly every player in the game is given that pass just because it's like it's right there in front of you. It's probably the clever thing to do. But Clifford was just backing himself. And I suppose that's what it is about him, is he just oozes confidence at all times, like that, like I'm going to do this, and like, give me the ball and I will do the right thing. And I suppose that was the difference for a finish. I suppose Sean O'Shea, he stepped up as well, mm-hmm. and kicked some brilliant scores. And he actually reminds me a small bit of you, Ryan, in his kicking, in that when he takes on a kick, it's invariably going over the bar. And I suppose what I'm going to ask is, like, as a kicker, is it something that you, I know you talked about free taking, that, you know, it's a lot about the routine. Like, kicking from play, is it something you focus a lot on yourself, to, like, whether it's going out with a bag of balls, the kind of individual training that you'd have known from boxing, or is it a kind of a routine thing more so?
I actually wasn't a big kicker in my underage. I was more of an assister. I wasn't racking up crazy scores when I was underage or even minor or 20s level, really. But in terms of individual, we don't really get that much opportunity. Yeah. I don't practice that much outside of training, just in terms of load. I've had problems with my groins in the past due to kicking. Overuse of kicking and free taking. And so, like, during training, I might get 10 before training. And then when maybe some of the managers are introducing a drill or going through a drill, I'll just take 6 or 7 more and get someone else to explain it to me. And I might get 40 in a training session, plus then the in-game shots. But for me, it's all just technique. I was maybe, yeah. and I'm sure there's a lot of people, young lads listening, I used to rush my shots. You watch the best kickers in the game, they watch Killian O'Connor. He slows down for that last second, that last step, and it's as if there's no one around him. And sometimes you're going to get blocked down, but more often than not, you create your separation and then kick it over the bar. Bar Conor McManus running full speed. that took some quality. Like, they will, but if you keep doing that, they could hit the corner flag. But for me, it was about slowing down that last second. I was just rushing shots. And like, speaking to the best, Jay Dock, Killian O'Connor, the best shooters that we've had in Mayo for years, just learning different things and getting different tips off them. But quality over quantity all the time. There's no point going down with a bag of balls. And like, I'll have plenty more time nowadays because I'm not training with the intercounty setup, and I've had more time. But I wouldn't go down with 40 or 10 balls and kick 40 shots. I'd go down and kick 15, and I write them down, and my efficiency should be over 85%, 90% all the time, rather than going down with no number. Andy Moran gave me that tip a few years ago, so anyone listening, I'd definitely say go down with a number and then take that number and mark it down, and then over 10 sessions then you'll see what type of a percentage shooter you are.
Mm-hmm. My number would be 3. Yeah, 2 out of 3, and it'd be a really good day.
It's a difference though, isn't it, to shooting? No, it is, like, yeah. Because Niall Loughlin, he missed one that he probably should have got. Rogers hit the post, they had a few, Derry had the wides, and when Kerry got the chances, like, you knew Sean O'Shea wasn't going to miss. Stephen O'Brien nailed his one.
Yeah.
Like, it comes down to that. And I know Derry were very good in the first half.
Yeah, they were so clinical in the first half. That's why it's nearly...
More often than not, it's whoever has the highest shot efficiency that wins the game.
Yeah.
Like, 52%, as I said, Derry, when we played against Louth and Cork, our shooting efficiency was 50%, which is not going to get it done in senior intercounty football. So trying to get it above that 65% is really, really important. And that's just all down to practice and reliving their moments in training and pretending that every shot in training is like the last kick of the game in an All-Ireland final or an All-Ireland semi-final, and just nailing that moment.
Mm-hmm. And then last thing on the Derry-Kerry game, and it's actually about a very good sharpshooter, is Shane McGuigan. I thought he was brilliant. He took a lot of punishment, as you said. He got a good scores, good frees. But that point at the end, the one he didn't mean to score, Philly McMahon made a really interesting observation, I thought, in commentary. He, like every forward does, and you don't have to admit that you do it, he stole a couple of extra yards just for his free kick. But he was like, he shouldn't have done that, because now he's too close nearly to drop it in, and it ended up going over the bar, and it's the first thing Philly said. I thought that was an interesting thing. He was nearly better taking steps back,
yeah,
and putting a bit of fizz on it.
Yeah, look, that he just had so much time to think about. If that was just taken quickly, he wouldn't even thought about it. He just lobbed it in, but he was trying to, well, I think what he's trying to do, I'm going to try and get height on this so someone can punch it. And then he just, adrenaline just put too much. I was actually sickened watching it just for him, like, because he's obviously their star player and a quality footballer. Brilliant year again this year. But yeah, just a bit of a sickening one to end on. It was a bit sore.
He had a great game as well.
He was brilliant. Yeah. He was brilliant. And, you know, he'll be kicking himself for that, thinking I needed to give my teammates a chance. But look, in moments, things like that happen.
Oh yeah, listen, and look, Derry will be thanking him for all he's done this year and in the Ulster final and stuff like that. But we'll take a quick break now to look at the Sure No Sweat quiz. In partnership with our good friends at Sure, official statistic partners of the GAA, we're now going to look at the most eye-catching stats from the weekend. This week's winner is Dennis Kennedy, so congratulations to Dennis. And now that the dust has finally settled and we know that Dublin and Kerry will be in the All-Ireland final, what we want to know is how many times these two teams have met in the final so far. So now it's up to you, our audience, to give us the answers in this stat-related question in the comments below to be in with a chance of winning some Sure theme prizes. Winners will be announced on the show next week. Okay, welcome back. And now we're going to look at Dublin's victory over Monaghan. Niall, going into this match, the narrative was, can Monaghan stay in the game? It's going to be a bit of a trouncing. You know, Dermot Connolly said that he actually thinks it'll be a bit of a whipping. And, you know, and I know a lot of people were giving out to him about that, but he was probably just being as honest as you can be. And like, all the numbers would suggest that was going to be the case. And even how the game finished, I think it was a 7-point difference in the end. You're like, yeah, that's sort of how I would see that going. But it didn't tell the story. That's not what the game was like.
Yeah, that was the sickening thing, that it ended up being the 7 points. And even though Monaghan had been so close with 60 minutes gone, you know, there was nothing in it, 12 points apiece. Monaghan had put up a brilliant fight. And the thing, Desi Farrell did his interview after the game, like, he was so respectful of Monaghan. And I think he called them the most improved team in the country. And, you know, it was clear that he was being genuine, that they were not taking Monaghan lightly. And I suppose, Ryan, you've had loads of games with Monaghan the last few years. And I suppose, is that the thing? Are they an underrated team?
Oh, definitely. We played them in Castlebar this year and lost. They were fighting for survival. And, yeah, look, they have a lot of top quality players, a lot of experienced players who probably in their mid-30s. Carl O'Connell probably had a massive season again. McCarthy kicked two winners in a row there at the end of the group stages. And as I said earlier, Conor McManus rolling back the years yesterday. I hope myself it's not the last time I see him, and a lot of sports people in Ireland, I hope it not. But a few defenders, I'd say they'd be hoping that it is. But he was brilliant yesterday. He just showed class is permanent. And some of the scores he got were absolutely outrageous. And as well, the freeze he got in the Armagh, the Armagh game as well, when he came on, was outrageous. But yeah, Monaghan are definitely, they're nearly overachieving, I think. They weren't expected to do much at all, and definitely put it up to Dublin. 7 points, as you said, did not tell the story. They were right bang in the game, but Dublin's strength and depth came into play in the final quarter.
Yeah, and like it's testament to Conor McManus that, you know, Dublin win this game, and yet he's the biggest talking point, you know. And it shouldn't even be, well, Conor McManus plays well, that's hardly a surprise. He's been doing it for like 15 years more so. But it's just, you just can't get sick of watching him, you know. He just oozes class, and you know, like, his age profile would probably make too much out of it. Like, I'd say a lot of the times he was dropped this year is because he was carrying injuries. You know, Vinnie Corey was honest about that. Like, more often than not, if you're picking your best Monaghan team, he will be starting. And he played the full 70 minutes, and he didn't look any slower than you would expect him to be. What's it, I mean, getting older, I mean, you're still in your prime, you're fairly young, but do you think, knowing the demands of intercounty football, that in 12 years time, which I think would bring you to 35-36, you could still be doing it?
No.
Really?
No, not with the, like, I was chatting to Jason Doherty after our game against Dublin, like, and I think he is 14 done. And I was just, I asked him that exact question, like, was it different back in 2010 or 11 to what it is now? And he said, it's like chalk and cheese. Like, they weren't doing, like, it just wasn't that demanding as it is now. He said he would definitely not have been able to do 14 years of what he's done for the past. Now, he's done a double cruciate as well on top of that. And to come back from what he's come back is remarkable. But yeah, to answer your question, like, 12 years of what we're doing right now, I don't think is is realistic, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's so demanding. It's 9, 10 months of the year. Like, and the effort and the sacrifices and the sacrifices I'm making, and I know my teammates are making to perform at the top level. I'm not sure. 12 years. I don't think it's going to last that long. But yeah, look what Conor McManus has done over the past 15 years or so has been. I think there was a stat I seen that he scored in every single championship, Monaghan championship game since he made his debut.
He's bound to live.
I think but even not to miss a game.
Yeah.
Like to injury. I think Edo has something, you know, she has something similar in terms of his availability. I think he's missed one Leitrim game in his since whatever, 2008 or 2009, whenever he came in, like, so it just that alone is incredible, just to be available for them.
How did them lads do it? Like Donal Keoghan was the same with me the weekend. I think it's over 150 appearances he has. He's never missed a championship game since the debut in 2012. Like, I suppose sometimes for them lads it probably is, and you maybe see it with Aidan O'Shea, that it is just mind over matter when he has a knock and playing.
Yeah, possibly. And you have to have a bit of luck involved too. And maybe the condensed season now, if it was like that back then, you mightn't. Sure, they had 6 weeks off after the league campaign back in the day, you know. It wasn't that long ago, but... it's just like the effort and the time that goes into recovery and minding your body and maybe not going out for a game of golf on a Monday after a game on a Sunday, just staying in and getting ready for Wednesday training. Just the small things, the respect that them boys need to be shown for the service they've given to their counties is unbelievable.
It's even more so because, like, you're Conor McManus, you're Aidan O'Shea. It's not like you're invisible in those games. You're targeted. You know, picked on, double man marked, you know, get this guy out of the game. It's nearly the goal of some defenders, you know, like, and they're still, you know, that they're doing it and still performing it. It's absolutely incredible. But there's a few old guards on the Dublin team too now. There's a lot of old guards, actually. They all came back, get the band back together. I think one of the biggest differences, definitely, especially coming off the bench, was Jack McCaffrey. Even just seeing him coming off the bench, I'd say Monaghan players just look over and go, oh God.
Yeah, it is. It's such a tough thing to see, I'd say, when you're going, you're kind of hanging into a game there, you're 12 all. I'm not sure what the exact score was when McCaffrey came on, but nightmare to see a lad like him coming on. You mentioned the band coming back together. What was it Jack O'Connor said after the game? He said, do you know, they didn't bring all these lads back for the crack. Like, do you know, Pat Gilroy and all as well. But I suppose, like, you can see it. James McCarthy is another one of those lads. He's probably rarely missed a game as well. I'd say unbelievable. But for me, one man I think that isn't getting the credit he deserves now, and I'm going to make a claim here and say that this is the man that is vying for Footballer of the Year with David Clifford, and I'm going to say it's going to be a shootout in the All-Ireland Final is between David Clifford and Cormac Costello. And I know he was man of the match at the weekend, people could accuse me of a bit of recency bias. But I think watching Dublin a lot of this year, I think Costello has been the main man in the forwards. He's been their most clinical forward. And when he gets the ball, in previous years he'd be guilty of maybe running down a blind alley or hitting a few wides. But this year he has been so clinical. And I was looking at the stats for it. In the real big games, he's missed a few games because he had a heel injury that ruled him out of a few of their group games in the championship, and he missed a few in the league too. But in the big games Dublin played, like the one up in Derry when they lost, he kicked 5 points that day, two from play against Roscommon in the championship. Probably their toughest group game that they had, he kicked 7 that day, three from play. He set up the goal against Mayo and kicked 2 brilliant scores from play. And again at the weekend, the points he kicked, the composure he's shown on the ball, I think has been hugely underrated. And I think he's like stood out a good bit ahead of O'Callaghan and Mannion this year, in that he has become the main man of that team. I'm not sure what you think, Brian.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And Pascal definitely deserves a shout out as well. He's been brilliant this year. I think top scorer in the championship this year.
Hanging on, I think, from Clifford now at this stage.
Yeah, after yesterday. But look, Dublin's forwards, especially bringing back the three boys in Cluxton and Mannion and Jack McCaffrey, has really bolstered their squad. Like, so... Cormac Costello again on Saturday was brilliant. Some of his scores in the first half were outrageous, and I think his shooting accuracy must be up close to nearly 100% now at this rate. Yeah. But yeah, look, when you have Conn, Cormac and Pascal doing well, you know, very rarely you're going to have three brilliant man markers, so whichever one they don't take care of, he's going to shoot the lights out, and that's what's been happening in the past couple of games.
No, definitely. And actually, really interesting on Cormac Costello. Dean Rock came on with a few minutes left to go, and they got a free kick, and Cormac had been taking them all day, and he gave it to Dean. And just so I'm just going to put you in a similar situation. You've been taking the frees all day, scoring them, and Killian O'Connor comes off the bench for the last couple of minutes. Are you giving it to him?
No. Well, like, not if I've been... I don't know. Yeah, I said that to my brother at home. Yeah. Like,
I thought it was strange.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe he wants to get the scores up. He's second, I think, in the current list behind Killian, Dean Rock. But yeah, I spotted that myself. I said to brother, I wonder what the... Cormac was coming off. Did he come off as soon as that score was kicked?
Maybe. So
maybe he had been told. But yeah, I did think about that myself. Yeah. But look, if the manager told me, look, when Killian comes on, he's freeze. But yeah, more often than not, whoever's on them from the start, if he's doing well.
Well, it goes back to that routine thing, doesn't it? Yeah. Like you're in routine at that stage. So.
But maybe like Dean Rock's probably up there with Killian as the best free taker ever. Most accurate, definitely, the two of them. So yeah, look, maybe that was an agreement between Desi Farrell and the two boys.
Yeah, just on Dublin forwards, what was interesting, they actually, you named all them brilliant players, and that's because that's what they are, but they did struggle in the first half, and they nearly actually played too many inside forwards. Do you know what I mean? Like, they like overloaded it. They didn't have enough like working players. It was, we always say it's the opposite, you know, the working half forwards get positions over the natural players, but it was like Paul Mannion, Colin Pascal, Conn O'Callaghan, like Paddy Small plays like on the inside for his club, Cormac Costello, that's the one we just mentioned, and like they needed Kieran Kilkenny to come on.
Yeah, but and Scully went off from, so really the boys nearly waited on. But I think the Monaghan backs had to get a lot of credit for keeping them at bay. Like, there's a lot of sharpshooters there. And I think Paddy Small kicked one off the right in the first half as well. But Kieran Kilkenny, as you said, coming on. Imagine having him on the bench to come on.
Yeah.
And McCaffrey as well. But it's going to be a cracker in 2 weeks.
100%. You watched or we mentioned the old guard coming back, and I suppose one of the most impressive of them was Mick Fitzsimons in the defence, getting in these blocks and just as good as ever. And I suppose he's always just so tight, and it's very hard to get the better of him. I'm not sure which Dublin back were you marking when you played him this year?
Merchant in the first half, and then he went off injured first 10 minutes, I think, in the second half, and then Fitzsimons went on. Yeah, he's a good player.
He's
good player.
Tight.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's strong. His recovery pace is like when McManus turned them inside in the first half, his recovery pace to get back the block was probably the best defensive thing in that game. He's a really good player.
Merchant then is nearly a different kettle of fish.
Correct, yeah. He likes playing. He likes being out in front. I think he won the first ball out in front on me that day. But yeah, you just have to get used to playing a lot of different players. Jack Coyne is the same, nice and tight like Fitzsimons, and then Leroy used to be different as well. So you just have to you do your homework on the video analysis beforehand and just try and pick their weaknesses and see. Some of them don't have many weaknesses, but you just got to try and back yourself then and double down on your own attributes and see if you can get the better of them.
That moment you talk about Fitzsimons and Conor McManus, where Conor McManus gets the ball, spins him, like uses his body to shield it, rotates around, like a real moment of brilliant genius. And then Fitzsimons uses all of his like guile and experience and pace to get goal side of him, and he gets the tackle in. That was a brilliant battle, because we talked about Chrissy McCaig and David Clifford, but Conor McManus v Fitzsimons, it was fantastic. What was it like watching it from the stands, especially in the second half? Did you see McManus want a free off him, and then he just gave him a sort of a smile as if to be like, and Fitzsimons was like, can't believe I fell for that nearly, you know?
Yeah.
It was just such a, there's so much respect between them, but I mean, they were going hammers and tongs.
Yeah, sure. Nearly 70 years between them, like the two of them, such stalwarts, have been there for,
they'll thank you for that.
They've been there like the whole way through, and their teammates would rely on them so much. I'd say it was unbelievable to watch. I didn't actually see it because we had a match ourselves Saturday evening, so I only seen the replay. Oh, but no, I'd say it was brilliant to watch. The two of the greats, like.
Yeah, and it's just class to get to see them on the grand stage, because just football championship this season in general, a bit of a slow burner. And then the last week of the group stages was unbelievable in terms of excitement and ups and downs. And then the preliminary quarterfinals was crazy good. Then the actual quarterfinals, the draw was like mouthwatering, but the games themselves probably didn't live up to it. And then the semi-finals, the draw was a bit disappointing. People were like, oh, it's going to be one-sided. But then the games were fantastic. Like, where is Gaelic football at the minute? Is it in a healthy place? Is it dying and not good to watch? Or what do you think, Ryan?
No, I don't think. I think every player is going to say they'd rather play matches over games. But I do think the condensed season is tough on players in terms of injuries. Like, a few boys picking up injuries. Maybe the first round of the group stage, you might be out until the semi-final with a... Well, if you ping your hammer or something like that for 5 or 6 weeks. But yeah, the 3 weeks in a row, as I said earlier, if that could be changed, I think a lot of players would advocate for that. Obviously, it's a big punishment to not top your group and then have to play 3 weeks in a row and then play arguably the best team who topped their group then at the end of that 3 weeks. But I know, I think like we've some great footballers, great forwards, great backs in our game, exciting players coming through, and yeah, I think football's in a really good place.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll just very quickly finish off with a round up of the Talcheon Cup final. Meath are the champions, and afterwards Colm O'Rourke was in fantastic form. Niall, now I know you speak Latin, so you'll understand this. After the match, he quoted a line from the poem by Horace, whenever the Romans defeated Cleopatra, and he said, I'm going to butcher this obviously, Nunc est bibendum, which means
now is the time for drinking.
Of course, man, he's like a priest.
Colm O'Rourke is brilliant, isn't he? Like, yeah. I love him when the microphone is in front of his face. He could just stay talking forever, I'd say. And he was obviously in great form after the weekend and the win that Meath had. And I was just great stuff seeing him and Sean Boylan out in the field after them lads having won. Colm having won All-Irelands as a player under Sean Boylan back in the 80s and 90s, and you know, they're back again, and it's Meath's first win since that controversial Leinster final in 2010. Like, and it obviously is the second grade, and at times, like, we were sitting here maybe a month, 2 months ago, and you're like, and who was it said it? Joe Brawley, I think, had a tweet up saying that, you know, Colm O'Rourke was looked on as a dinosaur in Gaelic football, and people were writing Meath off and saying, even coming into this game, that Down are the modern team. But Meath, it was back to the old days. Well, it was the size. The two boys midfield, Jack Flynn, I'd say, is about 6'3", and Conor Gray, I think, is about 6'6". And they horsed Down out of it.
Yeah, I mean, and all credit to Colm O'Rourke. He really, really used the Talcheon Cup. Like, that's not where Meath wanted to be. They wanted to be playing in the Sam Maguire, a massive footballing county. But when they were pushed into the Talcheon Cup, they really attacked it, rotated the squad nearly every game. He was giving debuts to some young lads. Now they've got experience in Croke Park. They've got a trophy under the belt. Like, what do you think of the Talcheon Cup and just the idea of having a second-tier competition?
Yeah, look, I definitely agree with it. The players that train all year round and then go out maybe and get hammered against another team, it's just disheartening after all the work you've put in. So I definitely think, like, all spectators want a good game of football to watch, and they don't want one-sided affairs. So to watch the Talcheon Cup, a lot of good games, close games, and I'd have a soft spot for Down. My mother's from Brinesford up and Down, so I was willing them on Saturday evening. But yeah, Meath's done brilliant, and some of the subs Colm O'Rourke made, I think they kicked maybe 6 points between the two lads who came on. And I definitely think the Talcheon Cup is good, and it's better for the game. And now Meath have something to look forward to in Sam Maguire. They know they're going in, and they have that ticket well and truly got now.
Mm-hmm. And Down will be disappointed, Niall, because after the semi-final against Laois, they nearly had too perfect a performance. Like, it's hard to work on anything after that. They were just sort of, they were indecisive. Yeah. No one wanted to take the goal shot. Like, I know that they leaked a crazy, bizarre, weird goal.
Yeah.
And it dropped short, came off a knee.
That kept Meath in the game.
Yeah.
Meath were struggling there at that time. But isn't that what Desi Farrell said? Semi-finals are there to be won.
Yeah.
Maybe Down were too good in their semi-final that they should have only scored two goals against Laois.
Yeah, let them concede some.
And they'd have had a better
clean the wrong goal and just pop it over. We leave that for the final.
Yeah, the semi-finals are there to be won.
That's it. Well, they won their semi-final. You can give them that. Okay, well, we're going to finish up very soon, but just last word to Ryan. Who will win the All-Ireland final?
Yeah, look, it's going to be a great spectacle. For me, I'd be tipping Kerry, probably just because of David Clifford, I think. He just, again, yesterday was the difference, but it's going to be the semi-final last year was brilliant. Obviously, Shawnee kicked the free at the end to win it, but fortunately, I wish it was Mayo. I wish I wasn't here and I was getting ready for an All-Ireland in 2 weeks, but look, that's not the case. But it should be another cracker, and it's probably the two most informed teams of the year. And looking forward to it. I hope it's a good game, and may the best team win.
Well, we're really happy that you're here anyway, Ryan. And
me too.
Yeah, thanks for coming on to the show, and thanks to Niall for coming on as well. And thanks to our sponsors, Sure 72-Hour Protection. We'll be back next week.
You've been listening to the GAA Hour, brought to you by Sports Joe and Sure. 72-hour non-stop protection, tested to the limits. Sure, it won't let you down.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.